everybody. My name is Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that I am eternally grateful. I have a home group, and that's the Westconnect group in Jacksonville, Florida. We meet on Monday nights at 8 o'clock, and if you're ever in Jacksonville, Florida, give Dave and I a call, and we'll take you to a meeting. One of the beautiful things about being sober is you can be in the phone book. So we're in the phone book. So just give us a call, and we'll take you to a meeting. I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor. In fact, my sponsor is going to be 50 years sober on December the 25th. So I am very, very blessed that I am sponsored by an absolutely fabulous woman, and I have been sponsored by her for 31 years. And Dick, thank you so much. One of the things that, you know, just when you think you're off the hook and things are going to go really neat, you're back on the hook. And I looked at the, you know, at the little printout when it came out, and Dave and I were doing traditions and relationships, and God, we love to do that. Because Dave and I love to be married. We enjoy being married, and it's been fun. And because we want to be married and stay married, we've been willing to do whatever you need to do in order to do that. So I'm like, oh, gosh, this is great. This is all we have to do this weekend. Then I get a call from Dick. You're going to do steps 1 and 2. Okay, that'll be all right. And then I get a call from Thursday as we're driving here. Oh, wait, correction. You're doing 1, 2, and 3. So one of the things that I just want to say is that alcoholics are very rigid. And one of the things that I think God tries to do is try every way he possibly can to loosen us up and try to wear life like a loose garment. And you have done fabulous, because I've done conferences like this, and when people start changing and doing all that kind of stuff, it's really stressful. Poor Lee, who's always happy and joyous and all that, you should have seen him on Thursday. I thought he was going to have a stroke with all the changing and going on. But that's what we do here. You know what? Life's in session. And that's what we learned about in Alcoholics Anonymous, that life's in session. So we gotta just go with the flow. Go with the flow. So if you're really uptight this morning, for God's sakes, loosen up. For God's sakes, just loosen up. And I'm with my heroes this weekend. It's just been absolutely fabulous. I don't know where I saw Bob's over there. Bob started us off. You didn't know you were going to talk either. And Bob didn't know he was going to talk either. So, and you started us off fabulous. I love your wisdom. I love your honesty. You know, one of the things, if you ever wanted to think, you know, that Bob is, if you had ever crossed your mind that Bob's not a real alcoholic, you don't just have to ask Linda, just listen to his story, and you'll know that he's a real alcoholic. And it's just been wonderful. And Linda and Barbara, I just love you so much. And Linda said something yesterday that I've put down in my notes of the things to remember. And I just want to release my stranglehold on life. Just let it go. Just let it go. And I thank you so much. That was just put so beautifully. I loved it. And then we got to hear Clancy. And then Dave and I got to do traditions and relationships. So I got to play with my best bud. So that was just really fun, and we got to hear Clancy last night. And what's coming up for you is just amazing. It's just amazing. With the people that are going to come behind me, these are my heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just love to hear them. I love to be with them. And I've been with most of them lately, but I was so glad when Sharon came in, because it's been 2 years since I've seen Sharon, and I was just so happy to see you. Just, it's been a while, so I was just so happy to see you. I'm supposed to do steps 1, 2, and 3, And I really am delighted that I'm doing this, because the 12 and 12 says that step one is the only step I have to take in its entirety. And really, I only have to take the first part of step one in its entirety. And one of the things that I got to know Chuck just a tiny little bit before he died. Dave and I had moved to Southern California, and I got to be with him because our sponsors were people who were always hanging around Chuck. And so I got to be at his side for a few times before he died. And one of the things that Chuck said that I always loved, and he also says it in a new pair of glasses, is life is just a sequence of surrenders. But we have to have the first one before we can have the second or the third. And the first surrender that I had to make was a surrender to alcohol. And I want to talk about that, because one of the things that I want to say is that when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody seemed to be from alcoholic parents or alcoholic somebody. I do not come from alcoholic parents. In fact, the only person in my family who drank was my grandfather. And I can assure you, from my recollection, he never drank like I drank. He just had some beer now and then. But nobody in my family drank. Because now, when I'm in Georgia, this is no problem. But Southern California and some of the places I lived, they didn't quite get it. But you guys get it. I was raised Southern Baptist. And I'm telling you, they say, thou shalt not drink, and my parents didn't. Now, I have a theory. I don't know if this theory will, you know, I'll never be able to prove it, because my father was very young when he died. He died at age 60. But so I'll never be able to prove that theory. But I believe if my dad had taken a drink of alcohol, he'd have been an alcoholic. Because I will guarantee you he was restless, irritable, and discontent. And he was full of rage, and he would go into fits of rage that were absolutely, I know that he was totally and completely powerless over those rages. I didn't know it then, because I got to experience that myself. I didn't know it then. I know it today. And my parents were two abused children. And what happened was, is they were just like an alcoholic and an Al-Anon, and they found each other. And what happened is my parents had two opposite reactions to that. My father was very angry, and my mother was drawn into herself and very quiet. And I would look at my parents, like so many kids I'm sure do, and say, I'll never, ever be like you. And the thing of it is I became exactly like both of my parents. I say that I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous an angry wimp. I was full of rage, and I could not stand up to people. What I would do is I would swallow my anger in front of people, and then I would go home, and I would take my anger and rage out on my two little boys. And I would take it out on my husband. But my husband was a SAC pilot in the Air Force, and he was gone all the time. So the people who received my anger all the time was my two little boys. They were the ones who were affected by my alcoholism. I used to live in Southern California. And I lived in Orange County, and this will mean nothing to people in Georgia, but there are some Californians here. But I lived in Orange County, and I worked in El Segundo. Now, that's only 22 miles, but that is an hour and a half drive every morning. That was the commute that I made to work. And I made that commute on the way home. And that's all due to traffic, and you guys live in Atlanta, so you understand that. You have a ton of traffic, too. So what happened is I used to listen to this psychologist on the radio, on a talk show. And this psychologist said something to me that I believe is true for me. And she said, we get to act out our parents' pathology so we learn to forgive them. And that's what I had to do. I learned to forgive my parents because one of the things that I did is I did everything I hated about them. I did. The other thing is that they didn't do that much bad. But if you're an alcoholic like I'm an alcoholic, when I was a little girl, there was a song out there called Accentuate the Positive, Eliminate the Negative. Anybody remember that song? Well, I'm the kind of alcoholic that accentuates the negative and eliminates the positive. And so all I could see was the things they did wrong. And I am so grateful to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I have been shown how wonderful my parents were. And not only did I have parents who loved me, my parents wanted to give me everything they could. Now, I'm 73 years old. Not many 73-year-old people, mothers worked, but my mother worked. I was a latchkey kid before it was ever popular, but she worked. And what the reason that she did that is my dad only had a ninth grade education, so he was a contractor. He built houses. And my mother was a nurse. And she worked, and they had one reason for what they did, and that was so they could give me everything they didn't have. That's how much they loved me. They gave me dancing lessons, gymnastic lessons. My mother would sit up all night long making dancing costumes, making me clothes, anything so I could have everything that they didn't have when they were growing up. And not only did I have all that love, but I'm an only child. So everything was given to me. Now, I have no idea, you know, I'm not here to explain my background. I'm just here to give you some facts. But the thing about it is, all I know is I had that love. I know today, because after coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I love that. I see that. But I'm telling you, before getting here, I would have told you that nobody loves me. Yet I was a person who all my life was shown love and I was cherished, but I never could feel it. And I believe, I don't know if it was from, you know, coming out of the chute. I don't know. All I know is that I was so spiritually ill. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that we are suffering from a spiritual malady. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that if we are suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing is enough. You can't love me enough, you can't give me enough, you can't do enough. There simply is not enough for a person like me. And I remember sitting in treatment, and I know a lot of times people say, oh, there weren't treatment centers when I got sober. But I'll tell you what, there were treatment centers when I got sober, I went through three of them. I mean, I know there were treatment centers. I managed to find them. Bob Darrell managed to find them. We found them. But what happened is that I would sit in group. And it's much like that the way it is today, just like it was then. And they'd sit in group. And everybody would start sharing these horrible things that had happened to little boys and girls. And I'd look at them and I'd think, well, I can understand why you're an alcoholic. I mean, look at all these things that happened to you. But none of those things had happened to me. And I couldn't understand why I was an alcoholic. I couldn't get it. And then on the other hand, I couldn't understand. Everybody was talking about my mom was an alcoholic, my dad was an alcoholic, all of these things. And I kept thinking, well, my parents are an alcoholic, and I love Clancy was talking last night. He says, what keeps an alcoholic from getting sober? The one thing, my case is different. It's not that, you know, well, I was loved. I'm seeing that now. I didn't get it then, but I'm seeing that. And then they would talk about your mom or your dad being an alcoholic, and I would say, well, my mom or dad are not alcoholic. You know, how come I'm an alcoholic? And, you know, and I really truly believe that this disease has a genetic component, because I seem to produce alcoholics. And, you know, you listen to Bob talk Thursday night, and he and Linda really produce alcoholics. They got three of them. So I believe that there is a genetic component. However, I can't find any alcoholism in my family. But I know that maybe there is, you know, a predisposition to alcoholism. So we don't know all that stuff. And if you put a drink to it, you got alcoholism. If you don't, you've got a raging person who's restless, irritable, and discontent. So who, do we know all those facts? I don't know. Do they matter? No. What matters is that I'm sober today, and that I can see, because of the process of this program, that I'm blessed. I was so blessed. And there's a wonderful Al-Anon lady that's been gone for a while, and her name was Marcy White. And Marcy White used to talk about the blessing. And she says the blessing is that we get to, that we come into life and we're given the gift of love. Now, some of us don't really get that in a way that we can understand. And we come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, and there we're given the blessing, the gift of love. Well, you know what? I was one of those people who always had the gift of love. I was loved from the very beginning. And today, I am so grateful for the parents I had and the love they gave me, because it took a long time to get through that shell and open it up. But once it was open, I could see and receive all the love that my parents had given me. And so for that, I'm grateful, because I had the blessing. I took a drink of alcohol when I was 18 years old. I was an Air Force officer's wife, and I had received an invitation in the mail to go to a coffee that was given by the base commander's wife. And I had no idea what I had signed up for. I just married a man that I thought was just as cute as he could be in that uniform. And I tell you, today, I love it, because I get to fly a lot, and I can sit at an airport and I see a man in a uniform, and it just still does it to me. I love being an American. I love the patriotism of being an American. I love that I got to have that life. I love that I got to see people serve because they loved it. I love it. I just absolutely loved it. And so all I knew is I'd married this cute little guy, and he looks great in a uniform, and he even looked cuter in a flight suit. And so I went to this coffee, and all of us little second lieutenant's wives are sitting out there, and this lady begins to tell us that what we're going to have to do in order to enhance our husband's career, and what our responsibilities are going to be as an Air Force officer's wife. And I was horrified. I was absolutely horrified. I'm like, I can't do this. I am a hick from Texas. You know, you're going to attend the right dinner parties. You're going to go to the right dinner parties. You're going to dress appropriately. You'll wear the right length gloves, all the things that were going to happen. And I'm a hick from Texas. I don't even know where the forks and knives go. And how am I going to do this? And I was so overwhelmed with feelings of inadequacy. And that was the feeling I always had. And that's another thing that Clancy was talking about last night. When I say I had feelings of inadequacy, I never felt I was enough. I always had this feeling that I didn't fit in. When you start telling that to another alcoholic, they just, oh, I've never heard anybody talk about things like that. But those were the kind of feelings that I had. And I didn't know how I was going to ever. These women were educated and sophisticated. I knew they were, and I was none of those things. So what I did is they had a luncheon, and I went to that luncheon, and I took a drink of alcohol. All of these women were taking, it was a fountain. It wasn't even champagne, it was sherry. And it was this fountain, and they had all these glasses lined up, and everybody would pick up a glass and tick their glass up under the fountain. And they were doing it, so I did it. And that day I had no idea that I had put something inside of me that would light up a disease called alcoholism. I had no idea that that would happen for me. All I knew was, as I took that drink of alcohol, and I think the really funny thing is that probably everybody doesn't have this, but it seems like most people do. I didn't know that I was going to be speaking in 2013 at Woodstock of the South and would need to remember my first drink. I didn't know that. But you know what? I remember that drink as if it were yesterday. When I took that drink, I remember what it felt like. I remember how warm it was. And that when it went down, what seemed to happen was is I just had this anxiety. I don't know if anybody else are anxious. I was an anxious alcoholic. And I had this anxiety. And it just seemed like about a couple of glasses of that. And my gosh, that just was gone. And then all of a sudden it felt like I could breathe. Just take a breath. And then these women were talking, and I seemed to be able to smile and nod and laugh in the right places. So I just want to tell you that's what alcohol did for me. And it would turn, as all people who have the disease of alcoholism, it will turn. What ended up happening is I ended up having two sons. We ended up being stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine, which is at the very, very tippy top of Maine. Really cold there. It's a very, very isolated duty station. One of the things that I experienced in the Air Force was because my husband was in the Strategic Air Command, we were always in isolated places. But we were always in the United States. But it was, you know, Grand Forks, Plattsburgh, New York, Loring Air Force Base, Maine, places like that. And what happened was is I had these two little boys. I have no clue how to be a parent. I don't know I'm suffering from a disease called alcoholism. I don't know that what's wrong with me is I'm selfish and self-centered. And when these babies cry all night and they're colicky and all these things, I am so selfish and self-centered. I think they're doing it to me. That's how I feel. I think they're doing it to me. And what ends up happening for me is I end up going to an Air Force doctor and he says, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nemutol and drank alcohol. And I'm here to tell you, if you do that, you're not an active alcoholic. I was never a party girl. I always said that I wanted one of these. You know, you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you don't know that just being a drunk laying around and the horrority of me. And see, like, I want all the funny stories. I sponsor a woman who had an affair with a one-legged preacher. You know, I want stuff like that. Here I am. I don't have any of that. I come here with a bucket of shame. And I didn't have a lot of fun with my drinking. Because I don't know if anybody can remember what it's like to control your drinking. You know, have to be at a function with the Air Force, and it is not acceptable behavior for an Air Force officer's wife to be drunk and disorderly. So what I would do is I would sit with a drink, try to sip it, and just have that stuff going inside of me because I had the phenomena of craving. And it was going on and it was eating me alive. And I was just having to sit there through this until I could get home and just throw that bottle up and just ease that pain. But what happened in the meantime is I was left with these two little boys. And my husband was gone, and he was gone for years at a time. And I was left with these two little boys. And what happened for me is I became a child abuser. I was a child abuser in every way. The disease of alcoholism took me to a place where I harmed my children. I harmed them physically. I harmed them by hitting them, pulling their hair. I harmed them emotionally by screaming names at them. And I harmed them spiritually by saying, I used to say things to my youngest son, if you were first, you would have been last. Because he was so much trouble. And screaming and yelling and carrying on with my children until they were absolutely too terrified little boys because they had this mother. And what would happen is that I had two sons. One was a musician and one was an athlete. And the musician and the athlete, they'd have games and then the other one would have concerts. And I'd say to my children, I promise you I'll be there. I promise you. And what would happen is I'd take a drink of alcohol and I couldn't get there. And these two little faces would come back and they'd be standing at the end of the sofa. And they would look at me and they would say, you promised you'd be there. And I would start raging at these two little boys. And I would say things like, what's wrong with you? Can't you see I'm sick? What's the matter with you? You're so selfish you don't even know I'm sick. And then they would feel ashamed because they wanted their mother to be somewhere and see them perform. That's what the disease of alcoholism does. That's what the powerlessness is. And I'm here to tell you, I loved my sons. I loved them. But I couldn't. Because of a disease called alcoholism, I was totally and completely powerless to take care of them. What happens for me in step one is I have a car wreck, and that car wreck brought me to treatment for the first time. And I entered a detox center. And it was a 7-day detox center. And what happened was, I want you to know, when I entered that detox center, I did not even know another alcoholic. I didn't even know an alcoholic. I didn't know any alcoholics in the Air Force. Nobody was like me. Today, I still don't know anybody. None of them are here. None of them, I guess, need to be. I didn't know another alcoholic. I'd seen the days of wine and roses, and I'll cry tomorrow, but that didn't mean anything to me. And I entered this treatment center, and, I mean, I'd listen. These were some pretty low-bottom drunks. They were, you know, it was a detox center. It was a county detox center. And I had a car wreck, and my husband had said, there's a treatment center not far from our house. So I went in there. And then we'd sit up all night telling these war stories. And I'll tell you one thing, then those who know me know that this is not true today. I didn't even say the F word when I came to treatment. Boy, I've learned really good. I can do it good. Maury's shaking her hand. I slung it at her yesterday. But it's like, that is how naive my life was. But in here I was with this secret life of abusing my children because they absolutely got on my nerves so bad. I could not handle these kids. They made me crazy. And we'd sit up all night telling these war stories. And oh my God, I loved them. I loved them. But all they did is just to reaffirm that my case was different. This isn't me. I don't do this. Oh my God, these people are criminals. Talk about a criminal. I'm the one that should have been in jail. I'm the one that shouldn't have her children. I'm the one who should have been locked up. And it was absolutely criminal what I did. I'm the one that should have been. But see, it didn't look the same for whatever reason. And then I got sober. And while I was in that treatment center, I had a Jitter House romance, you know, where sick falls in love with sick. And we went off for 58 days, and I was 12-stepped and brought back into that treatment center, and I was more dead than alive. I had been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And it wasn't so fun anymore that time. I didn't like the stories. I'd gotten to experience some things that I'd never experienced in my life. I didn't know that people treated other people like that. I'd never been hit in my life. My parents never hit me. I hit my children. My parents never hit me. And I had experienced things I'd never experienced before. And I knew. I love what Clancy talks about when he talks about the disease of alcoholism. He talks about sobriety is the problem. And you see, I didn't know, but that was what was the problem. I knew, all I knew is, I didn't know it was the disease of alcoholism till much later. But all I knew was, I can't live sober. I can't live with me sober. I can't. I can't stand the mother I've become and the daughter I've become and the wife I've become. I can't stand who I've become. And that 7 days was up. And when that 7 days was up, I got a bottle of scotch and I got a bottle of Valium and I checked into a motel. We are people who have been given the gift of grace. There's not anybody here that ought to be here. None of us should be here. Talk about a second chance that Sonia sang about today. Talk about a second chance. Sharon talks about seconds and inches. Talk about seconds and inches. Those are the things that we, you know, that we're here because of all those things. The gift of grace. All of us have some angel in our life that gets us to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It might be in a really strange kind of way, but they get us here. It's amazing. And what happened for me is a woman I worked with. She said something came over her that day, and she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I had just shut the door. It hadn't latched. And she pushed it open. And on that day, that was April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. I am here by divine intervention. I had a piece of paper I carried for many years that said I was dead on arrival. These are the things that happen to us as alcoholics. And what happens, I believe, the gift of grace that happens to us is God breathed life back into me. And all of those things are miracles. And one of the things that I know is that I was not in touch with the enormity of that miracle for a very long time. I simply did not get it. I didn't get the gift for a very long time. But the powerlessness, I was so powerless over alcohol that the thing that I loved the most in the world, which was my two sons, I absolutely harmed and robbed from them the gift of safety, security, all of the things that any little child is supposed to have. I robbed from them. And thank God I had a sponsor who did not give me watered down AA. He didn't, when I got through reading my fifth step, he didn't say to me, "Polly, you harmed your children." He looked at me and he says, "You're a child abuser. And you don't even have the right to have those children. And you're going to go make amends to them for what you've done." Thank God for that. Because I needed to look at my demons. I needed to be faced with my demons. I needed to see the unmanageability of my life. I needed to see the powerlessness and the unmanageability of my life. I was absolutely powerless over alcohol, and my life was so unmanageable that I had taken this disease and harmed my sons. And I was faced with that. I ended up being, when you try to commit suicide, I ended up in one of those 5150s, 72-hour holds. They were still going on in 1977. And I got court committed to a treatment center, to a psychiatric unit for 72 hours, which was enough time for my husband to obtain a court order from a Fort Worth judge that I was a detriment to myself and others, and I was court committed to a treatment center in Dallas, Texas. And I entered that treatment center on April the 11th of 1977. And some of us are sicker than others, and I stayed in that treatment center for 6 weeks. And by God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977. And for that, I am eternally grateful. Step two is I came to believe in a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. And I'm here to tell you, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with that Southern Baptist God. And all I could think about with that Southern Baptist God was, I'm sitting there and they're telling me, you know, that I got to find a power greater than myself, and I've got to find a God of my understanding. And all I know about is my God of understanding is absolutely, all I can hear is these preachers screaming up, you know, there, you're born a sinner. You're going to burn in hell. And I'm telling you, when I'm faced with what I'm facing with, there is no doubt in my mind I'm going to burn in hell. There's no doubt. There is no doubt in my mind that this God, this angry God that those preachers used to scream from the podium, that angry God, I sometimes thought he's going to set me on fire right now. I was hopeless when it came to a power greater than myself or the God of my understanding. And, you know, it just said, came to believe in a power greater than myself. I was very blessed. I believe that no matter what, because I believe this program is God's program. This is God's program. And all of us get exactly what we need when we come to this program. And what happened for me is a man was put in my life. He was the man that threw me over his shoulders out of that motel in Euless, Texas, and brought me back into that treatment center. This man ended up being my sponsor. And this man had been a Monsignor priest. He had been a captain in the Navy, and he had been an only child. And his name was Frank, and he was sponsored by another Frank that would come into my life and be the finest man I ever knew, a man by the name of Frank Honeycutt. But Frank Fitzpatrick was my first AA sponsor. And I think I got exactly what I needed. Because what happened for me is Frank said, Polly, I'm a priest. And I didn't find God in the Catholic Church as a priest. I found a lot of power and a lot of ego, and I could tell a lot of people what to do. He said, but I didn't find a God of my understanding. I didn't find that. And he says, all I want you to do is I want you to just believe that I believe. And what you can do is you can hang on to the God I have. I'm going to loan him to you. Because you see, I had that same God you have. I was going to do is I was going to be in purgatory, and that was it. And I wasn't ever going to get out of that place. Not for what I had done, how I had lied and had what I had done as a Catholic priest. I knew that that was going to happen. Just like you know that God's going to, that you have this fear. I was so afraid of God. And I can hear my mother saying, we live in a God-fearing home. And you know, today I live in a God-loving home. I don't fear the God of my understanding today. All I see, I don't have a God who punishes. I no longer have this punishing God. I have this God that is totally and completely full of mercy. Absolute mercy. That He would save a wretch like me. Absolute mercy is what I have today. And Frank would just say, just believe that I believe. And you know, there's many days today that I can play God in my life. And I forget about that power. I will try to run the show. I will try to tell my children that are adults that I know more than they know. I will try to dictate things to the people I sponsor, especially in areas that I'm not supposed to be messing around in, like relationships, just in their business. And I'll find out that, oh my God, I am so dead wrong. So dead wrong. So what happens is I'll continue to try to play God in my own life. and in the lives of others. I forget about that power that's going to return me to sanity. I forget about that power. And what happened was, is I hung on to Frank, and I began to believe in that power. And I began to believe in Frank's God. And then it started to come to that I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care. Oh, and I just loved Barbara continued to talk about the care. What do we do when we care about something? To the care of God, as I understood Him. And I didn't know how to surrender my life to this care. I didn't understand how to surrender. I didn't know what that was about. But what happened for me is one of the things that I am so grateful for is that I didn't get intellectual AA when I came to AA. I'm so glad that I didn't get stuff that's been so... It's just been so diagnosed and dissected and everything. I got it simple. Frank shared with me his experience, strength, and hope. And that doesn't mean we didn't read the book and we didn't go through it, but he just shared his experience, strength, and hope. And he looked at that step. It was very clear what that step said, is that I made a decision. And the way Frank said to do it is he said, Polly, just do it like you were going to college. He says, what you do is you make a decision to go to school, and then you spend 4 years doing it. And he says, what we're going to do is we're going to make a decision. You're going to make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him. But what we're going to do is we're going to take the next 9 steps in doing that. And when we get to the 12th step, you will have had a spiritual awakening and you will be in the arms of your Creator. You will absolutely be in the arms of your Creator. And what happened was, is that in step 3, like, why would I want to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God? And then we started reading about the 3rd step in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, look at your life. Look at your life managed by you. You're, you know, the director, the producer, all of these things. Look at the train wreck you have by you trying to run your life. I love what Dave says. When Dave came to AA, they told him, they said, Dave, it looks to me like you'd be willing to turn your life over to anybody that would take it in the shape you're in. And that's the way it was for me. I'd be willing to turn my life over to anybody that would take it because of the train wreck that I had in my life. These steps, when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was, I took these steps and I realized that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. Now, I'm here to tell you that there are many times today, I'd love to tell you that you do this and it's done. It ain't ever going to happen to you again. That's not true. I have not taken a drink of alcohol. And I have not taken any of them funny little tablets that I used to take. I have not done that. And I want you to know that's the only thing I haven't done. That's the only thing. My life has been unmanageable in the last 36 years so many times I can't even tell you. And it continues to happen. Because I have, you know, I need to suit up and show up to a lot of meetings. I have the worst forgetter. I just, you know, I forget. I am going to start trying to take charge of my life. And I'm going to run things. I don't know about any of you, if you've been running things lately, I just want to ask you, how's that working for you? You know, I mean, that's because that's what I'll try to do. You know, I'm just, and my life is unmanageable. And I have to surrender. I almost every day at some part of the day, and I love that with you talking about that, Linda. You know, I can get up, do my readings, do the things that I love to read. I've got some non-AA approved literature I read. And I'll get up in the morning and I'll read that, and I have a prayer list, and I'll start naming off the people on my prayer list, and I'll just pray, and I'll sit there, and you know, everything's good. I have a chair I sit in every morning, and I do this stuff, and I get my little puppy, and he sits beside me. I used to have two little puppies on either side, and I just have one little puppy. And sits beside me, and we pray. But then I get up. You know, and then it starts. And then the day starts. But I'm blessed. I'm absolutely blessed. And one of the things that Clancy was talking about last night was how AA started. And it started by first century Christianity. And that doesn't have to be Christian, because if you're not Christian, that's fine. But what first century Christianity is one person helping another person. It's not everybody gathering up and people preaching to you. That isn't what it's about. It's about one person sharing with another person. Not even preaching. Just sharing. Just sharing their experience, strength, and hope. How they found God. That's all it is. And what happened is that in doing so, we get to have a thing we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope all of you here have one, and it's called sponsorship. And what we do is we get to have a sponsor, and we get to be sponsors. And what happens for me is I get on with my day. And I don't know if any of you are guilty about this, but I start thinking about what I have to do for the day. Nobody suffers from that more than Dave. You ought to hear me. I'm like a drill sergeant with him. You got to do this. Come on, we're running late. You should have heard me this morning. Dave, you got X number of minutes. You got X number of minutes to get ready. I just have, you know, I'm having to whip everybody into shape and get them moving. And I got this checklist, and I got to do all this stuff, and I got to get it ready, and I'm going to do this, and we got to do that, and blah, blah, blah. But then what happens is my phone rings, and it's somebody I sponsor. And it may be a call-in, or it may not be a call-in. It may be somebody that needs to talk right then. We don't know. And by God's grace and the gift of sobriety and the gift of having worked for, you know, hard for a long time, I'm retired today, and I don't live on much, but I don't need much. But what I get to do is I get to work with what I get to do my passion. I get to work with women in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's nothing I love more than to be able to work with the women I work with. It is absolutely my passion. And what I get to do is they'll call me, and you know what? That list went. We've changed the day. The day is different now. And what happens is I'll stop. And when I'm talking to them, I'm talking about God. And I'm trying to share with them what's their answer. Because it isn't me. I'm not the answer. The answer is God. It's their God, and their God of understanding. And so what we start doing is we get back to talking about God, and we get back to that sharing, one alcoholic sharing with another. And guess what? All of a sudden, that I gotta do, just kind of comes down. And it's back to that thing that I love, you know, which is, how important is it? How important is it? There's nothing more important than that woman on the phone. That's what's important. A little other dinky stuff I'm going to do, you know, clean the sink, mop the floor. None of that stuff matters. I guarantee you it ain't going anywhere. It's going to be there. Now, what I need to do is I need to pay attention to that phone call. And what happens is I haven't a clue what I do for them. I haven't a clue what I do for them. But I know what it does for me. And that it puts me back in that place that I need to be in. That place where I'm safe and protected again. And I'm not driven by the anxiety that was always there the day I came in to Alcoholics Anonymous. What happens is as soon as I start focusing on doing that, all of that starts to just go away. And I get the opportunity to say, you know, did you say the third step prayer today? How's your relationship with God today? Who's in charge? I've got a couple of women that are having, you know, job problems. We've had some job problems going on. And we get back and we remember that we have a new employer and that God's in charge. It's not, you know, that person you're working for is not your employer. God's your employer. That's just your money source. That's all that is. God's just shooting the money through them. It's what we talk about is I've got a new employer. And that's what I have to remember. And I got to get back to that step three to see, you know, I got to make that decision again to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. And I can go read that stuff in the third step that it talks about that I've got, you know, I've got this new employer. I've got this power working for me every single day. And I got this power that allows me to work with some women that call me sponsor. Which is the greatest honor a person can be given. Because what that is that person tells you their whole heart. And that is an amazing trust. An amazing trust. We're given. The book says that we can help when nobody else can. We can help another alcoholic when nobody else can. I think God's given us an amazing job. A big job. A big job. That we get to help other alcoholics. I'm so grateful that I haven't ever got it perfect. That I get to do a redo every day. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that I get a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance. And by saying the maintenance, that indicates I need to do something. The maintenance of my spiritual condition. I am so blessed to be an alcoholic. I am so blessed to be sponsored by this beautiful woman that is going to have 50 years of sobriety. I am so blessed to be able to sponsor women who help me. I am a person left to my own devices, will to be depressed and be suicidal. But if I get the opportunity to work with another woman, I get a day of reprieve. And for that, I'm grateful. And I'm blessed to be able to walk this walk with the man of my dreams. God bless.
Thank you, Polly. The next meeting will...